everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? So this week, this is the second week of June, I think, 2021, WWDC, Apple's big worldwide developer conference, where they talk about new technologies and features and software integrations and all sorts of stuff related to its software developer community. And WWDC has been going on literally for decades. It's a tradition at this point, normally held in person, but of course, with everything going on the last couple of years, last year and this year as well, it's virtual. So Apple did its big presentation video kind of in its, you know, pre-recorded style like it's been doing lately. And I was at first really disappointed, not with the production quality of the video. They always do just a fantastic job presenting information. Like, their marketing department, I'm pretty sure, is just the best that money could buy. But the content, the actual like features and new technologies that they announced, I found at first to be really rather boring and very incremental. And I've been looking through everything that was announced. And if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw that I was live tweeting my reactions to some of these things, more tongue in cheek than otherwise. But, you know, after looking at everything that they announced and kind of noodling on it for a little while now, I actually feel like this maybe was perhaps the most traditional, you know, in quotation marks, WWDC we've actually had in a while. The most notable thing about this year compared to years past is what it lacked, and that was any sort of hardware announcement. Apple didn't announce a single new piece of hardware. Everything that they talked about today was software related. What's interesting, though, is I also noticed pretty much everything that they announced was just new features. There wasn't anything groundbreaking. There weren't any major shakeups in the way the technology works like we've seen in the past. You know, a couple of years ago, Apple talked about on the macOS, there was this new file system, you know, APFS, moving away from the legacy HFS Plus and that sort of thing, app sandboxing and just all sorts of other core technology changes like we've seen before. Now it's really just kind of like, yeah, they threw in new features into, you know, the next release of iOS and iPadOS and macOS, but nothing is a major shakeup. It's just we kind of twiddled the the knobs and buttons a little bit, and here's a new kind of fresh thing. But, you know, maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I'm looking at some of the stuff that, you know, got released. They were talking about privacy, of course. There's lots. Yeah, Apple, you know, for the last several years has been very privacy focused, and I appreciate that. It definitely, I think, helps build trust in their brand and their ecosystem compared to the relative Wild West that some other computing and mobile device platforms have proven to be. And, you know, in traditional Apple fashion, they also kind of release new features that go after other companies doing the same thing, but Apple tries to do it, you know, one better or better value, that sort of thing. Related to privacy and security is, for example, the new iCloud Plus service, which replaces kind of the previous paid iCloud. If you're not too up to speed on it, obviously, there's a free tier for iCloud, and you get an email account, and you get some amount of cloud storage, and that gets you an account so you can buy stuff off the App Store and, you know, the Music Store and all that kind of stuff. But for a long time, there was a paid tier for iCloud that, more or less, the headlining feature for that was just it got you extra storage for, you know, keeping files out in the cloud. Well, this time around, Apple announced what they call iCloud Plus. Kind of tired of hearing the word plus at the end of everything, but whatever. And it adds a few security features. One of them is what they call Hide My Email, but it's basically a bunch of email aliases. So you can give out a different email address than what you actually use to someone. And if it turns out they end up sending you a bunch of spam or malicious content or messages you don't like, you know, harassment emails or whatever, you can easily just turn off that email. Now, arguably, Gmail has done this sort of thing for a long time. How well Apple does it, I think it's going to be a little better, because with Gmail and aliases, you append like a plus and a string at the end of the username in the email alias, so you can still kind of tell who it is. And some spam platforms have gotten smart and realized that they can just, you know, strip the plus whatever off the end and get to your real email address. So if you need to give it out to someone, like in person or whatever, you know, that doing the way like the Gmail does it with the aliases is a little obvious. With the Hide My Email service for iCloud Plus, it's a completely different email username. So you can say, you know, if your normal email is jsmith, you know, johnsmith@icloud.com, and you get harassed into giving your email address for some mailing list or whatever, you know, you feel like you have to give it out, but you're really not too thrilled about it, you can say, oh yeah, my name is actually, you know, johndoe@icloud.com. And they all the messages come into the same mailbox. And if it turns out, you know, you don't want to get emails from that anymore, you can easily turn off that alias. So they're doing kind of that thing where it's like, it's not necessarily groundbreaking tech, but they're taking you one step further when it comes to features. They're also including private relay browsing, which is what they call it, which is basically just a VPN. Kind of nice that they're including that built in, you know, as part of iCloud Plus VPN services. Boy, I can't begin to tell you how often I get email solicitations for doing sponsorship deals for, you know, VPNs on my videos. As just a matter of policy, I don't do sponsorship deals. I just don't. But somehow all these different services, and you know which ones I'm talking about, because if you watch other YouTube channels, you've seen them do, you know, ad spots for them. They've all found my email and they just keep spamming me about it. Hey, you know, do you want to do a spot for us? Da, da, da. It's like, whatever. I mean, if they're that aggressive with trying to do their marketing, you kind of wonder some of the intentions of these VPN companies. So it is interesting and I think kind of nice with how forward Apple has been about its privacy and taking, you know, security seriously and all this kind of stuff. I feel like in the very least, an Apple-backed VPN service is probably going to be at least as trustworthy, if not more so, than some other services. Granted, you're limited to using it with your Apple devices. It doesn't sound like it's a, you know, a generic VPN that you could use on any platform, but Apple always builds pretty much everything to be, you know, inclusive to its ecosystem and, you know, very limited options for you using their services on other platforms. So I don't think that really catches anyone by surprise. Another example of where Apple is like trying to kind of one up the competition by using its leverage is when it comes to security cameras. So Apple has this whole HomeKit, like home automation API and everything. Apple doesn't really sell much in terms of hardware itself that does the home automation stuff. There aren't Apple doorknobs or security cameras or thermostats or whatever that you can buy. It's all third-party manufacturers that can hook into that API. But something that's interesting is Apple, a while back, added support for security cameras into HomeKit. Now they're saying that as part of iCloud Plus, you can use your iCloud account to store the security camera footage. But what's interesting is with that service, you get an unlimited amount of storage. And that really kind of puts the screws to some services like Ring, because those generally are kind of a two-tiered deal where you buy the camera and it gives you maybe a small amount of storage for free for a certain amount of time. And it's all cloud hosted, of course. But then if you want more storage or a longer retention period or whatever, you have to sign up for, you know, a paid service, a subscription to it. Now, Apple is basically saying if you buy one of these other cameras that's, you know, HomeKit compatible, if you subscribe to iCloud Plus, you can just store all that security footage out on iCloud for free. So yes, you are still paying for a subscription service for your security footage, except there's no incremental cost to doing so. That's just an add-on benefit that they're giving everyone for free. And they didn't increase the price for iCloud Plus when they switched to it from the previous paid iCloud plans. So arguably, it's a really good value add that comes at no additional cost. And it's in some ways, I think, a sweetener because the paid iCloud tiers haven't been overly popular just because of how much, you know, relatively limited things that they offered you. But now that Apple's throwing this kind of stuff in, suddenly it's a better value. So as, you know, we've been seeing so far, not just with Apple, but the tech sector in general, things keep moving more and more towards services instead of one-time purchases. It's kind of nice that at least if Apple's going to continue to leverage on subscription fees and that sort of thing, at least they're bringing the value. Because oftentimes it feels like you get nickeled and dimed, you know, with all the other subscription plans and everything. I mean, have you looked at streaming video services lately? Like, cable TV is kind of dead, but to get all the content, and I predicted this, a lot of people, not just me, predicted this years ago, but to get all the content that you used to have, now you've got to subscribe to multiple streaming services and you're pretty much paying the same amount of money as you did when you had cable TV. So it's nice to see, at least with one subscription service, that they're just giving you more stuff for the same amount of money to hopefully bring the value. And I'm really kind of crossing fingers that Apple keeps leaning that direction with other stuff too. Can we give you, you know, more for the same amount of money? Try to bring that value. Whether or not that's good in terms of competition in the marketplace and all that, I mean, some people are all heavy into Apple's a monopoly and they have to be stopped, you know, like Epic Games. Others are like, you know, I don't care as long as I'm getting a good value, a good deal out of it. Maybe it'll cause Amazon to step up, you know, like with the security camera thing, with its Ring product line. Maybe Amazon will give you more for your money now. You know, maybe with Prime, they'll give you free unlimited Ring storage for those cameras or something like that. I mean, competition is good. And if one company does something that's fairly pro-consumer like that, other companies kind of feel obligated to match because the customers are going to realize they aren't getting that good of a deal after all. Other things, I mean, like iPadOS added kind of a new multitasking mode. iOS leaned heavily on communication. So big updates to iMessage and FaceTime. Arguably, some of those changes are ones that other competitors have had for a while. Like I noted in a tweet, you know, they're talking about how now FaceTime, you can do things like, you know, share your screen, or you can get, you know, pre-invite kind of things going on and all that. And it's like, this is all stuff that like Google Hangouts has had for a couple of years now. So, you know, at least Apple's trying to catch up in some ways. It's still not a full cross-platform thing, but I'm pretty sure that's a carrot that Apple isn't really willing to take away to get people to want to switch to its products. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, I guess, in some ways. Mac OS as well. Not a whole lot of changes here, although there was one really cool feature that, again, kind of comes back to that whole, you know, Apple kind of firing at other companies who already do a thing and taking the same idea, not necessarily the exact technology, but taking kind of their product idea and just baking it into one of its own, you know, products. And that is, what do they call it? Universal Remote, I think, for Mac OS. And this is actually not just a Mac OS thing. It ties into iPad OS as well. But the idea is, it's, if you've ever used this, the piece of software called Synergy, it's predominantly used by Windows users, but there's a Mac version as well. The idea is you can have multiple computers and basically set up kind of like a virtual keyboard and mouse so that if you've got, say, a laptop and a desktop side by side and you've got Synergy installed on both, you can use the keyboard and mouse on one to control the other. So it's almost like you've got a multi-monitor setup. So if you've got the laptop sitting off to, say, the right side of your desktop monitor, you set Synergy up that way. And when you drag the pointer off the right side of the desktop monitor, suddenly now you're moving it around on the laptop screen, you know, and you can keep focus over there and use the keyboard as well, that sort of thing. Apple's basically baking that into the Mac OS and iPad OS now with these new versions. And it's also including things like drag and drop file support. So you can, you know, be even more productive than just keyboard and mouse. There's better integration between the two. And I can see for some people that being really useful. For me, I actually have always had this sense of compartmentalization, I guess you can say, where I've never done well with multiple monitors on one machine. I've never done well trying to split my work across multiple interfaces at the same time, you know, trying to do two related tasks across two computers just has never really worked for me. I've always been just a one big monitor kind of guy. And if I'm using multiple computers at the same time, they're doing different things. I'm multitasking in completely different ways. But there are other people who would want to use an iPad as a second screen. And we've had Sidecar for a while that lets you do that just literal second screen thing, but you've never been able to actually run and control apps on the iPad. It's always been just like a second monitor for a Mac. So now they're just taking it the next step and allowing you full control over these devices from one interface. And I know for some people that's actually going to be a really big deal to have that nice level of integration. Again, for me, it's just kind of a, you know, that's nice to know that that's there, but it's not a groundbreaking thing. Other major things that they spent a decent amount of time on, and you can kind of tell they were at some points during this presentation, I think, kind of stretching stuff out, where they talked about enhancements to the UI for Safari, their web browser on all their platforms, and how they changed the way tabs work. And it's like, you know, that's great, but you're just kind of rearranging things a little bit. You didn't need to spend 8 or 10 minutes or however long it was talking about, oh, how beautiful the new interface was. It really kind of goes to show that they needed to fill, I think it was an hour and 45 minutes with, frankly, what I feel was about 45 minutes worth of content. So why? Why did they end up kind of stretching things out like that? You know, why so limited updates? Part of me feels like they had actually planned to do hardware announcements this time around, but didn't. And I think the pretty obvious answer is just the supply chain right now is an absolute mess when it comes to manufacturing, and not just within technology, but lots of other stuff as well. Car plants, manufacturing plants have been shut down for a while because they can't get key components, and lots of prices on various things have just skyrocketed. I mean, the joke right now is lumber. You know, people going to Home Depot and spending, you know, like 500% more for a piece of wood than they would have a year ago, you know, and part of that is just due to demand. I mean, during the pandemic, everyone's stuck at home. Well, you might as well remodel, you know, you can be at home, give yourself a better environment. So demand spiked and eventually supply kind of, you know, failed to catch up to that. And then other, you know, manufacturing lines, especially within silicon production and chip production. I mean, that's really what's impacting car manufacturing for the most part. But I feel like that's actually kind of catching up to Apple, that the iMac, the new 24-inch iMac announcement that we got not too long ago, really was kind of what Apple was able to scrape together. And, you know, new chips, new technologies, new whole machines, I think, are kind of stuck waiting as Apple tries to build up that stock. And as big of a company as Apple is, and with all the money they have, you would think, oh, they'd be able to wrestle their suppliers into giving them everything that they need. Technically, yes, they probably could. I mean, Apple could wave a ton of money in the faces of some of their manufacturing partners and say, you give us everything that we need right now. The thing is, that wouldn't be profitable for them. And if there's anything that we all need to remember about Apple is that they don't do anything that isn't profitable, at least that they don't think is profitable. They've had plenty of products that have flopped over the years, of course, but they've always gone into it thinking that every single thing that they do is going to turn into profit somehow. And that includes, of course, hardware. So, you know, if they aren't able to get the quantity built up of components that they need for new machines, they're not going to stick that to end users in terms of massive price hikes, because that's not a very good look PR-wise. And they're also not going to pre-announce stuff too far ahead of time. That's burned them in the past, where they've pre-announced new products and new technologies that are coming out. And when they say that, they generally need to give a date. You know, like if they say, okay, you know, during WWDC, we're announcing this brand new computer and you'll be able to buy it in the fall. Well, if the fall comes and goes and you're not able to buy it, people are going to start scratching their heads and be like, yo, what's the deal here? Does this product actually suck? Are you still even going to support it? Like, how serious are you about it? That sort of thing. I feel like Apple doing specific product announcements and saying, okay, you know, you can buy them in an kind of undefined amount of time and not like they go on sale next month and give you a firm date and stick to it. I think those days are over. So I think part of it is, you know, maybe they have finished the design for new MacBook Pros, which was what was, you know, really kind of on tap for supposed to be announced at WWDC, both 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pros with the new, you know, Apple Silicon chips in them. There was talk about a new small iPad, the iPad Mini, believe it or not. I can't believe Apple still sells that thing considering that they have these just giant ass iPhones that are almost the same size. But, you know, there are still people that buy them, I guess. And then what I really want is an iMac Pro. I want basically the big screen version of the iMac. The rumors are something like 30 inches is what they're going to bump it up to, like a 5.5K display or maybe 6K, kind of similar to their big, super expensive, you know, cinema display thing, but with an even more powerful chip, more RAM, faster storage, all that kind of stuff. That's what I really am looking for, because my current machine is getting a little long in the tooth. And I can tell you what, it's simultaneously funny, embarrassing, and hilarious at the same time to have a MacBook Pro that can run circles around a high-end iMac that's only a few years old. You know, like it's meant to be just kind of a consumer level device, even though it's called a MacBook Pro. It's just the M1 chip that they've been putting in everything else. Yet this i7 equipped iMac with 32 gig of RAM and the highest end graphics that I could get back in 2017, I bought it, is just crawling compared to what this MacBook could do. I'm just like, I'm chomping at the bit because I want a faster machine, but with a bigger screen. And that it's that screen issue that I just can't really get over with editing on the MacBook Pro. I've done some episodes on the MacBook Pro, but I'm ready for the new hardware. I just don't think Apple is ready for the new hardware yet. And that's why we lost out on all of those announcements this time around. But like I said at the beginning of this episode, in some ways, you know, this is kind of like an old school WWDC, because they years ago didn't really always announce new hardware at it. It always was generally about the technology and the features, the software. I mean, that's what WWDC is about. And so if anything, maybe this kind of course corrects us back to what all these different Apple events should be about. WWDC should be about software and features and APIs and supporting developers, and other events throughout the year can be used for specific hardware announcements. You know, we've kind of gotten into this cadence with Apple about certain times a year they announce certain things. Sometimes there's exceptions to that, but you know, like new iPhones generally always come out in the fall. And it's starting to seem like now, you know, new desktops, new iMacs and stuff are kind of late summer, early fall as well. I would like them to shake that up a little bit every once in a while, because otherwise I think the products become kind of predictable. But having an event that's generally just about software, well, even though it does end up kind of boring in some ways, you know, I think it's fine with me. As always, thanks for listening.